The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast. Making their way to the ring, talking about the world of professional wrestling, the team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
What is going on, guys? You're listening to the HSP SmackDown Review on the WWE Podcast. We are back at it again. I am Jeff Martin alongside with the trendsetter Brian Perga, recapping SmackDown for you. And man, I gotta say one word for this week's episode, trendsetter, and that is chaotic. What's going on, man? How you doing first and foremost?
How am I doing first? A lot better than Elias, and a lot better than what Jeff Hardy's been dealing with, because when you see the opening parts of SmackDown, it's really different from anything you've ever seen before, Jeff. We're so used to the opening credits starting, and then I can't say I'm a huge fan of the music for SmackDown right now. Are you ready for it?
Yeah.
Good time. Not really. I'm still kind of waiting for that songs. Good time to happen. Yeah. But usually start with a 20-minute segment in the ring, somebody talking on the microphone, or basically a match already starting off the show. But give credit where credit is due. I'm sure a lot of people won't give her credit, Jeff. Like, listen, a lot of fans for some reason are really against the fact that since WrestleMania, when you look at the whole situation with Undertaker and AJ Styles, Bray Wyatt and John Cena, now a lot of these matches that we see, these they're formatted differently because you don't have an audience there. You have to change it and make it more of like a movie cinematic type of thing. Now, granted, it's a male soap opera. It's storyline based. You hope it is, at least. And with this is what happened. You open up to a car wreck outside the Performance Center, where Elias is being escorted into an ambulance. Renee Young is running around, trying to keep her composure, interviewing superstars to say, did you see the accident? What happened?
And then Braun Strowman is there as he witnessed it and called actually it in. And so he's there, hoping they catch whoever did it. But then it sort of leads to Jeff Hardy, because they find that the rental car belongs to Jeff Hardy. So they go search for Jeff Hardy and they find him.
Yeah, they find him somewhere in somebody's backyard inebriated, and they handcuff him, going to take him in for questioning. So, very weird dynamic. But at the same time, I have to give a little bit of credit. You know why? Because it's something different. It's something different from the norm that we normally see here. And so they're really putting an emphasis now. If this is Jeff Hardy's last, I'm not stealing a phrase from The Undertaker, but if this is his last ride, his last one good run left in WWE, they're really taking an effect kind of similar to like a CM Punk type of thing. They're
life
bringing back the past.
Imitating
art type of scenario. I mean, when you first saw it, Jeff, what was your initial reaction? Was it like, am I watching something, a movie? Or is it more of like they're really taking this now into the dramatic movie cinema role about Jeff Hardy?
It looks like an angle that they're, of course, devising up and coming up with something for Jeff Hardy, and we'll see how Elias figures into it. But it's just like you said, life imitating art. And then you're like, wow, is Jeff okay with this? Obviously he has to be to sign off on the angle. And like I said, it touches home a lot, because Jeff Hardy's issues have been in that kind of fashion, so he's had a problem with substance abuse, and like I said, so I mean,
do you think something like this would have occurred the way they did it if there was an audience there, or is it more because there wasn't an audience?
You have people
in the Performance Center cheering and being fans, but is it more they have to go to this level to get that type of attention, to get that point across in the storyline?
I don't think it's done because there's nobody there, but I do agree with the fact that they're kind of doing something for shock value, because to me, we were going to get Jeff Hardy and Daniel Bryan, and we're going to get Elias and AJ Styles, and then all of a sudden, we get this swerve to open up the show on SmackDown. And I told you this last week, and once you get to hear us a lot more here, if you go follow the High Spot Podcast or you listen to this show, something that I really focus on is that Eric Bischoff said that fans kind of like that realism, or whether not knowing whether it's real or not. And they're like, oh, wait a minute, I know that was supposed to happen, but that other thing, I'm not so sure. So I think it's something that WWE is trying to do, but it's just a track record recently, things like that, angles like that. And if you want to go back to the Rusev, Lana, Liv Morgan thing, it started out great. Even the whole wedding thing had its, people talking, but then after that it fell flat. So here's another situation where you're dealing with personal issues like Jeff Hardy with the substance abuse, and then you have Elias getting hurt, and then you have Jeff Hardy going out in handcuffs. So, it's something that's a little bit real, And if that's what they're going for, it did have a little shock value that Jeff Hardy would sign off on something like that. But now the question is, where do they go? So backtracking all the way back,
exactly.
I do think that it doesn't have to do with the fans. It just has something to do with WWE trying to swerve us and creating this big angle. But I just hope, Trendsetter, that at the end of the day, that it pays off, because that's the main thing that you want with these kind of angles. You want it to pay off, and we'll see what happens. But their track record so far in the last few months, it tends to think that it's not going to pay off. So we'll see what happens. But an impactful first start to this angle.
No, definitely. It's definitely something different. And it leaves you with three questions, basically. One, has Jeff Hardy relapsed? Has he kind of done it again? Has he fallen under his own demons? Two, if it's not Jeff Hardy, you know, falling back into his old ways, who's doing this? Is somebody framing him? Is somebody kind of putting him up to this? Which I'm sure a lot of people might think is the better of the two options, and opens up a bigger question now too, which we found out later on in the night, eventually when all this stuff was cleared up, was that what's going to happen now in the Intercontinental Championship Tournament? Basically, the dream match that we talked about last week was, you know, if this is set up correctly, wow, you could have Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles. Now, they've worked before in TNA, but never in this scenario,
too. And now
it's
not going to happen.
And now it's not going to happen because now Jeff's out. Elias got basically run over. He's unavailable. So it pitted the question, like, what was going to happen? AJ Styles, I agree 100% wholeheartedly, took the bye. He's right into the finals.
As a heel should, take the bye. You don't have to, you know, why would you wrestle
somebody else?
Not just
a heel,
but
anybody smart would do that, Jeff, wouldn't they?
Yeah, and it's the easy way out. So, of course, AJ Styles is going to take it.
It's the smart way, Jeff. Yeah. All right, come on. Let's be honest. It's the smart way. It's not the easy way. It's not taking the cheap, you know, the easy road. No, it's the smart way. But Daniel Bryan, being a man of wanting to always be in action and wanting to represent himself really well and say, listen, I want to give another person an opportunity. Basically, there's a battle royal that was going to fit everybody in the same room that they're in the gym area of the Performance Center. The winner would face Daniel Bryan later on the night. We found out later on that winner was going to be Sheamus in the main event with Daniel Bryan to become who would be the next opponent for AJ Styles in the finals. So pretty interesting dynamic there in terms of involving everybody there. Again, shock value that Elias and Jeff Hardy were out of the picture too. So what did you think about that? That idea that they're bringing those guys all together, which ultimately pitted Sheamus and Daniel Bryan in the main event of SmackDown.
Yeah, well, a lot to cover there, Trendsetter. I mean, you're right. They had that whole locker room thing over there. Good to see Adam Pearce make a little cameo there with the fellas. And, you know, you got a lot of interaction between Ziggler and Jey Uso. It's weird, you know, Jey Uso in singles competition. I don't know if Jimmy's hurt or whatever, but that was interesting to see. They had the Battle Royal. You saw a lot of dialogue between Shorty G and Dolph Ziggler. And, of course, Baron Corbin and Sheamus is really at the forefront here of trying to get back into this IC title tournament. So it leads us to believe if there's any number one suspect in this whole thing right now, it's Sheamus, because he's kind of found a way to manipulate his way back into this. So yes, he wins the Battle Royal. Then you have Sheamus there is obviously going to take on Daniel Bryan later on. And then Cesaro and Shorty G kind of have their little side thing that we'll talk to that we'll talk about in a little bit too. But yeah, it sets up for a really interesting night. And again, a night that you didn't expect this to happen, because you were going to get Daniel Bryan and Jeff Hardy and Elias and AJ Styles. So the question is here to Trendsetter, what happened here that they derived from that storyline? Is it that they really believe in this angle is going to lead to something better than what could have been happened tonight?
Well, you think that's the route they're going, because, you know, I think more than ever now, because of the situation that we're currently in and that everybody's kind of critiquing things more with more of a sharper mindset in terms of they're nitpicking at every little thing. I think they're trying to change things now for the sake of changing them, because they want to be as predictable. And granted, us as wrestling fans know sometimes things can be pretty predictable, especially when you're putting out either 3 hours of entertainment content or, in this case, 2 hours for SmackDown. You don't want to make things seem so one-sided in terms of you can kind of tell what's going to happen before it happens type of scenarios. So a huge curveball, what WWE was doing, but at the same time, it doesn't put us in a bad situation, because ultimately, whether it be Sheamus or Daniel Bryan, AJ's in the finals. That's all that matters, Jeff.
Yeah, so we've got lots to talk about still. Moment of Bliss segment with the New Day. An interesting new arrival to SmackDown next week. So much to discuss. I am Jeff Moore alongside with the trendsetter, Brian Berger. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew, and we'll be back right after this. All right, trendsetter. So a Moment of Bliss. And, man, it is a Moment of Bliss any single time that Alexa Bliss graces our presence. Dear Lord. And, of course, she's there with Nikki Cross. And the New Day, trendsetter, are their guests this week. Kind of a little tag team summit. And they kind of, you know, kind of discuss their future opponents. Kofi and Big E talk about the Forgotten Sons. And then as soon as Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross talk about who their future opponents could be, we get Bayley and Sasha Banks. We get the women's SmackDown Women's Champion alongside Sasha Banks come and join the fun. And then, of course, we get Bayley once again putting her best friend in a very, very sticky predicament. And you get Alexa Bliss in an impromptu matchup against Sasha Banks.
Like you say, it's sticky predicament, basically. Yeah, it's really, it's classic. You can't stand what Bayley's doing, that heel. And again, building up to what, you know, Jeff and I talked about last week was about maybe 2 years too late of this buildup of some point. At some point, it's going to be the end of this whole friendship between Bayley and Sasha Banks, but now on different sides. You know, I'll say one thing, too. It's like, you know, I'll applaud and I'll give a lot of credit to Bayley in terms of what she's done in revamping and reestablishing the character she wants to portray on TV. But a lot of people, I think, sometimes now with this whole new swerve of Alexa Bliss now moving as a babyface, and hey, I'll be the first to say, sometimes people are good at heels, some people are good at babyfaces. We talked about that last week with Sasha. She's a better heel than she is a babyface. Alexa, you know, I was kind of against it, but she's so multi-talented where she can go in so many routes and own it. You know, I wasn't a huge fan of the fact that she was going back as a babyface, but she makes it work for her because at the same time, she's not deriving or getting so far away from what truly makes Alexa Bliss that entertaining or makes her that much enjoyable to watch, and not just obviously from a physical standpoint, Jeff, because I know you're going gaga over Alexa Bliss. I mean, who wouldn't, right? Come on, we can all say it. But, you know, yes. One thing that's for certain, the mere fact that we know the history between Sasha and Alexa on TV, we know how they feel about each other off screen as well in terms of they're not huge fans of each other, they really don't like each other. But one thing you can't take away, Jeff, they have some pretty good chemistry in the ring. And again, after being away for so long, I think this is the first time I saw Sasha actually in the ring since she had returned.
Yeah.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but again, to work with Alexa and Alexa working with her, the mere fact that we know the history and the fact that they don't like each other or they respect each other at least somewhat in the ring, they've got some pretty good chemistry. It was a pretty entertaining match. Ultimately leads to Sasha winning and now pits to next week where now they will compete against Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross for the Women's Tag Team Championship. So, you know, it's pretty interesting because, you know, it gives you the ability to see Sasha and Bayley now as a team again and try to bring some relevancy to that tag team women's division, but also takes away from the women's division because now you have Bayley involved in that. And, you know, again, this, like what we spoke about, like, how are you building this women's division up, though? Entertaining match. Excited for next week what's going to happen, though. So, again, this is the foreshadowing now of what might be happening. But, you know, if you look at the two individuals, Sasha and Bayley, who won the first ever inaugural Women's Tag Team Championships, the history they have there. And we know that Sasha wasn't happy when the titles were taken away from them way too early. Having an opportunity now to regain those titles, pretty interesting dynamic there.
Yeah, we'll get that next week on SmackDown on Fox. Again, though, Bayley's doing a great job on the mic as well as she was doing commentary for the match. Again, just building that heel heat, building for that eventual matchup between Sasha Banks, which, again, we've talked about and discussed that it's kind of like 2 years maybe too late, but I'm going to give it a chance. I'm going to wait to see what happens, how it goes. It's going to be that long, really long kind of build to it, and, you know, we'll see what happens. But so far, Bayley, like I said last week.
You're a better man than I am, Jeff.
So far, like I said last week about Bayley, is that she is in a groove right now as that heel. There's so many questions whether she should have turned or not or whether she needed that change. And yeah, she finally did it. She went with it. She's doing her thing. And you know, this is the end result, and we're going to see an eventual match with Sasha and Bayley. And it's weird because Bayley's going to be the heel and Sasha's going to be the face, where we thought it would work the other way around. And when you go back to the NXT Brooklyn match and you see Sasha and Bayley and the magic they can do and what they used to, what they did in NXT, you know it's going to be a good matchup. But now the story and the build continues on SmackDown. Transfer. We also had another women's matchup, Sonya Deville and Lacey Evans. Now, I said last week Sonya Deville is someone to keep an eye on because I believe she's getting better and better. And Lacey Evans, too, is somebody that was pushed a little bit and has kind of been, you know, hovering in that position whether she could challenge for a title or not. And right now, though, a big match for both of them. And, you know, you kind of don't get a decision here. And, you know, it's a lot of personal stuff here. And Sonya Deville at the end says that she'll fight her, you know, on her time. And so, you know, you didn't get the result you wanted. You wanted a clear-cut winner in this matchup. But, again, I believe that these two female athletes will eventually, you know, be a challenger to Bayley's title, whether she's the champion or not. But these two are up-and-coming talents here in on SmackDown.
Well, you know, Jeff, to steal a phrase from the great Britt the Hitman Hart, you don't always get what you want, but you get what you need. And this is what the women's division desperately needed.
Another
in
rivalry,
opinion,
like
Jeff.
A side rivalry.
A side
right?
rivalry, a separate storyline. We're seeing where Sonya Deville, so jealous of being in the shadows of Mandy Rhodes, and who knows where that rivalry will continue. I mean, it could still work. I mean, I think it's put on the side and the back burner for a little bit. They really want to establish Sonya Deville. And then Lacey Evans, you know, you can hate her, you can like her, but you know what? The woman's put the work in my opinion. She's gotten better and better in the ring. Is she going to be an awesome technical, you know, five-star match type of wrestler? No. But she knows how to now be somewhat of a ring general in there. And you know what? To have a grudge match like this now where, you know, it was pretty physical, that match. I mean, there's one particular point where Lacey Evans, dude, she Irish whipped Sonya Deville into the table, and she literally hit the corner of the table with her back, and you're like, oh, wow, like, that's pretty intense. They're really trying to make this as physical of a robbery as possible, and you know, I love it, because if you build storylines outside the women's title, then you develop these stars, especially a rising star like Sonya Deville. It only helps that division out so much more. Not only Lacey Evans, I think, has established herself pretty well. We would like to see more layers of her. But now to see Sonya being that up-and-coming star, to kind of be put in that situation, like, listen, we're going to give you the time. Can you deliver? I think she's up for the challenge. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan of hers, but I am looking forward to her progression within this women's division. Thank you, guys. Thank you, finally, for a storyline that does not include the women's title. That's what you need.
Now, going back a little bit to the Moment of Bliss, we heard who the future opponents would be for Alexa Bliss and for Nikki Cross. It's going to be Sasha and Bayley. But the New Day, we're kind of talking about the Forgotten Sons. They had a little bit of a promo here. Kind of the same, you know, thing that they did last week. You were trying to, you know, get to know them. And, you know, you got two war veterans. And, of course, we mentioned Steve Cutler, who's a Jersey guy. So we're rooting for him, too. And
gotta represent.
Yeah, we went to the PC for one of these WrestleManias. Well, for the my favorite WrestleMania.
33, man.
Yeah,
come on.
I mean,
you can't forget that. Orlando,
yeah,
Florida.
Yeah, so we visited the PC. And then, you know, Steve Cutler. Jersey guy, really like from our town too, so definitely room for him. But again, when you look at these promos, do you see that the Forgotten Sons are going to be someone that WWE is going to have a long-term plan for, or somebody that, you know, okay, short-term, we'll give them a run, see what they do, and if they fall flat on their face, we'll just forget about these guys 2 weeks later? Kind of reminds me a little bit of Sanity.
Yeah,
but
we spoke about that last week.
Yeah,
so.
But, you know, again, you know, just really hope that they do have something for these guys and they're just not all talk.
My honest opinion, it's going to be a short-term fix.
Yeah.
I don't really see – I mean, they call themselves the Forgotten Sons. I'm going to be honest. It was a forgotten promo for me. I mean, there's a lot of words that are being said, but a lot of it's something I couldn't resonate with, I couldn't connect to, because at the same time, they're saying words that we really don't understand what their meaning is. So you could be intrigued by understanding, you know, what do they mean, and try to be indulged more in terms of who these individuals are. But ultimately, the end of the day, the end result is, Jeff, that they can go in the ring. We've seen them on NXT. We've seen what they can do. This is why they've been called up, quote unquote, to the main roster now on SmackDown, which they need to help out that tag team division, because the New Day's basically gone through everybody. They even said, what, 38 soon to be 9 or 10 or 11 time tag team champions. I mean, it gets kind of ridiculous sometimes after a while because you're like, you always want more competition. I think it will be a short-term solution in terms of that, creating a newer dynamic, a newer face in the tag team division that we could say, hey, listen, if they click, we can keep this going for a little bit, but I don't think it'll be a long-term scenario because we know how Vince thinks about tag teams, Jeff. We know how the scenario is when you have these trios before. I mean, Sandy was a perfect example. And guys, I don't give Jeff a lot of compliments because I don't feel he deserves them, and plus he never really makes good points.
I'm starting to win
you
over.
That's a great point in terms of the fact that if you compare it all to Sanity, Sandy had a lot of momentum coming out of NXT, and you're like, wow. How can we screw this up again? And thank you, WWE. You did it once again. I mean, you did it with Shinsuke. You did it with Asuka. And now, again, same thing here. When you bring up tag teams or anybody from, you know, the quote-unquote, you know, minor leagues, you want to call NXT is now a brand of its own, they always seem to kind of have to reintroduce themselves, but always falls under deaf ears because they have this momentum and then it quickly dies down.
Do you feel bad for Shinsuke? Because you brought him up and I saw
No, he's enjoying catering. He's getting a paycheck. How can I feel sorry for him?
Ah, man. I mean, you're right. It is his choice. He wanted to stay here. I don't know if he's going to re-sign. I don't know when his deal is up. And if he re-signs, he obviously knows what he's getting himself into. I mean,
well, we said the same thing when Sasha re-signed too. Like, well, yeah, you've re-signed now,
and you can't. I don't want to hear you being miserable or giving the revival or the revolt, whatever they're called now in AEW. I don't want you giving the man wish I was there and stuff like that, or
exactly.
Challenge people outside your women's division because you know you signed that deal. You're happy to take Vince's money the way you posted on Instagram. So I don't want to hear it. But Shinsuke Nakamura, is it just about riding waves at the beaches for Shinsuke, or does he really, you know, feel that this is the place for him in WWE? So I don't know whether he resigns or not, how close his contract is to expiring. But, you know, I look at Shinsuke Nakamura, and he's just back there in the background against Cesaro on. And another crime here is the way Cesaro's being dealt with. We'll talk about that shortly.
We've always been talking about, way before we did this show on this podcast network, we've always been talking about the lack of usage for Cesaro.
Yeah, and he's just basically regulated there. He's not even a mouthpiece for Cesaro, but he's just back there making gestures. And, you know, it's just, to me, it's like, wow, what just... Not a waste, but just like, man, it's just unfortunate. It's just unfortunate what the issue is. And we know what the issue is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We know what the issue is, the language barrier, but man, let Shinsuke roll, man. Like,
well, to answer your question, from a fan standpoint, yes, it's hard to watch because you see how talented he is and you see all he's done in his career, especially what he's done in New Japan when the excitement came over to NXT and then moved on to the main roster. I really think Jeff, unfortunately, he will not get another shot and opportunity to be in the main events picture. And not just for the language barrier, but I think when the opportunity presented itself when he was going for the WWE Championship at that time against Jinder Mahal, I think that was his opportunity.
Oh my God, we were
and
why?
When it didn't pan itself out, I think that was the last we're going to see. Now, granted, he faced AJ Styles at WrestleMania. He had other opportunities, but it was never going to be the exact same thing because that was his chance for, as a babyface, could people follow him? Would people get behind him? And unfortunately, and I'm not blaming this on Shinsuke, the way it was written up, how could you root for him? Because it was just such a car crash, no pun intended, in terms of what we saw earlier in the show. But it was that bad of a build up to Shinsuke that, you know, he had no choice but to fail.
We were there in Dallas when he was in NXT, and forget about it, they did a tremendous job in NXT pushing Shinsuke Nakamura. His debut in Dallas against Sami Zayn was something that I will always remember for the longest time, for eternity, because that was, you know, just the hairs on my arms were just like standing up because it was such a tremendous feeling. And, you know, you heard the rumors about Shinsuke, and you were like, wow, this guy is going to be something. And then he has a great run in NXT. We actually met Shinsuke Nakamura one of those in the SummerSlams in Brooklyn. And, man, we're like, there's no way WWE can mess this up. There's no way. And just somewhere in between there, Vince was like, oh, I'm not going to go with Shinsuke, and this is as far as he's going to go. And it's really just an unfortunate situation with Nakamura. You know, to me, the Intercontinental title, and we can have a little podcast on that too, is just, you know, we thought it would be something that he could, you know, bring back, But that IC title in this tournament, you know, you've got great wrestlers going to be wrestling in it, but just can that IC title be salvaged? And that's just a little monologue of thinking about what happened in Shinsuke Nakamura. But man, trendsetter, just...
But it works its way, too, in terms of what we're talking about in terms of Cesaro.
I feel like you're my therapist, and I'm on the couch, and I'm just talking about how wrong they've done Shinsuke. But think of it. How much do I owe you there? But
Isn't that what wrestling's all about? It's kind of venting. A heartbreak story. It's a venting. It's... It's telling your frustrations on things, not just of a talent like Shinsuke Nakamura, but you mentioned it before we start talking about it. A guy like Cesaro and even Chad Gable now is called Shorty G. And, you know, they had a little, you know, a spat during the Battle Royal where, you know, Shorty G eliminated Cesaro. The refs weren't looking. He got eliminated by Cesaro. Then they were going to have this grudge match coming back on SmackDown. And, you know, it had Shorty G winning it in a hard-fought match, really good match. Again, you put anybody in there with Cesaro, and especially a talent like Shorty G, Chad Gable, it's going to be a good match. But, like, I'm thinking, like, where is this leading? We've seen this story over and over again when Chad Gable is now finally going to be a singles wrestler. Okay, what are we doing here? Chad Gable, what's next for him? Are we going to constantly keep using the fact that he's a short guy? Okay.
Like, it's a handicap. Get it. Like, you know.
Yeah, I mean. And now with Cesaro, the guy is so super talented, and yet what are we doing? Nothing with him. So, you know, it's frustrating on all accounts when you look at that and you look at Cesaro and look at Shinsuke Nakamura. It's frustrating you have that much talent. You can't do anything with it.
So basically, Cesaro helped out Sheamus, you know, kind of get the victory in that Battle Royal, right?
Yeah.
And then we had Shorty G step up to Cesaro. And then, of course, you get the typical WWE, oh, you know, that a guy like you, you know, can't win the IC title, which, take a look at the IC title, folks. I mean...
Yeah, let's look at the history of who's won it, basically. It's not impossible to think that he could win it.
Yeah, I know. But the way that it's, to me, that it's just been devalued, I mean, anybody... could win that title right now. So that's one thing too. And then again, using the shortness as a handicap, I mean, all right, fine, whatever. But
we get it. He's short.
We get it, right?
Big deal. Let's move on.
And then what got me at the match, it's not the match. The match was okay. It was good. There's nothing wrong with the match. Cesaro and Shorty G are gonna have a good match. It's just the fact that Shorty G, you know, after you got the victory, you get Michael Cole and Corey Graves saying how, like, this is a huge victory over Cesaro. But how can you say it's a huge victory over Cesaro when Cesaro really hasn't won in the longest time? So, like, it's just...
It amazes me that they build Cesaro from what Michael Cole just said as this established star that you would never think would happen. But when you looked at his track record as of late, he hasn't been winning a lot of matches.
So it's not that impressive, you know? Yeah. You know? So, I mean... look, again, this is just basically just observations, you know. I mean, this is something that, you know, can get cleaned up, or they have to find ways to get, you know, these talents involved. Shorty G gets the victory. Cesaro is, you know, back in limbo with Nakamura. And then that whole Sami Zayn. I think that whole Sami Zayn.
Where is Sami Zayn?
Well, they gave the wrestlers the chance not to wrestle during this whole COVID pandemic. And, you know, he took them up on it. And, you know, technically it's kind of like, hey, you guys can actually not have to work. So Roman Reigns, took him up on it. Of course, he's allowed to because of the leukemia and everything. And
he's Roman Reigns, too.
And he's Roman Reigns, yeah. Right? Sami Zayn, too. He took him up on it. And this is one of the rumors going around is that he's kind of a tough guy to deal with in the locker room. Whether this causes heat.
Well,
him.
They're not rumors, Jeff. We've heard from several people when they've done their own podcast about, like, we need to put a match together. Like, he just keeps going. He doesn't stop. No. Like, it's either his way or...
Which is fine. No. I mean, to teach their own, right? But, again, you hear those things, and then you hear that maybe he does have some heat for taking him up, taking WWE up on that offer of not come in to the tapings or the shows because while this pandemic is going on. Totally agree. You know,
that would have been interesting.
This kind of hindered this group, though.
Yeah, it did. It hindered this group. It basically put a stalemate. They're stuck in purgatory now. I think even when this is all over and Sami can return, I mean, do you put them together now? They've lost a lot of whatever it is, the momentum they had gained before. That's what it's all about, guys. When you look at wrestling, it's always about momentum. How much momentum is leading you to a certain angle? How much is being taken away from you in terms of your positioning? And a lot of people say, you know, wins and losses don't matter. But I'm of the belief, Jeff, that, you know, the manner in which you do that, whether you lose or win, has as an effect. Because I always use the term, hey, guys, perception is reality. If you're perceived to be a winner or perceived to be a good contender, then a loss doesn't hurt you. But if you need a win because you're trying to build up that allure of yourself and you lose badly and you're embarrassed, hence Ricochet, you know, it hurts you. It hurts you badly. So, you know, this is another scenario in terms of whether it be Shorty G, Cesaro, Shinsuke, or even Sami Zayn in the scenario. We have all this talent pitted together, and unfortunately, due to this pandemic circumstances, all these things are happening. But again, it would have happened regardless, in my opinion, though. So it's just a lot of frustration when you look at that locker room, especially the talent they have, and nothing's being done with it.
I am Jeff Martin alongside the trendsetter, Brian Berger. You can follow him on Twitter at Brian Berger. You can follow me at Jeff Martin HSP on Twitter. We are here on the WWE Podcast with the HSP SmackDown Review. Now, coming up, we got the whole Mandy Rose Otis, you know, taking a little relaxation at poolside. We'll talk about the whole Daniel Bryan and Sheamus match, and then, of course, a SmackDown debut next week. You'll hear me and the Trendsetters' thoughts coming up on that. You're listening to the WWE Podcast. We will be back. All right, Trendsetter, so I know this is really going to make all the guys out there jealous, and I don't know if the more they put Otis and Mandy together, whether it's really going to end up being a disservice to Otis, because I think that they might start hating Otis because he's going to have that prize in Mandy alongside him. And yes, while it's cool to root for the underdog, do you think he's going to get a little bit of resentment from dudes out there because he's got such a beautiful lady on his side? What do you think?
Yeah, there's a question about that. They're going to hate him so much, but I think what this does, it doesn't do disservice. I mean, I could see your point in terms of Otis and people could start now resenting him because, oh, he's got the girl now. And I know the classic thing is you never want to get the girl. Guys, you look at any nice sitcom out there, a TV show, the moment the main guy gets the girl, that's when it's over. You want to extend it as long as possible. I really, honestly, in my opinion, I think it makes for just entertaining TV. If you want chuckles and stuff like that, that's what you're going to get. I really don't see how this progresses anything more. I mean, we know Otis is now the Money in the Bank winner. He's got an opportunity. He's got a contract, a so-called almost guarantee that he's going to be a champion. Now, that could change, obviously, in a lot of ways. It doesn't necessarily mean Otis will be cashing it in. He could. But, I mean, that's what most people might be interested in. But, again, it also, to me, it does a huge disservice. Once again, to the tag team division. Does a huge disservice to Heavy Machinery because, I know, it's hard to say, Heavy Machinery. You know,
They've been ducking
us ever since we met them in Orlando, and now this is it. They're splitting apart because they know now we're going to be talking about them.
I think
them.
Listeners are going to hate us because we're name-dropping like crazy because we've met.
Let them hate us. You know, hey, we met them. You
we're
didn't, guys.
Heat here, brother.
But I think it does a huge disservice to the tag team because I think honestly, at this stage right now, you've gone so far with Otis, and he's gotten so much over the crowd when there was an audience too that they're so now into him that it just Heavy Machinery doesn't work anymore. So I think what you've done now is you've, from an entertainment standpoint, you've moved past the tag team division in terms of that, and now, you know, you've broken up a tag team for something that I think in the long term doesn't really go anywhere. I think the only other way it could go is basically either Mandy cheating on Otis, turning her back into heel, and then basically that way to go. I mean, maybe you could see another
scenario. She looks into him, man. I mean, she daydreamed about the big guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole hunk of man right there too. But again, it's for giggles, isn't it, Jeff?
Brian, I will tell you this right now.
Although you haven't giggled in a really long time,
right there. I'll tell you this. Like I said the last week, Otis is not cashing in that Money in the Bank.
Well, you've been saying that too, like, and I mentioned that too. Like he might not be the one cashing in.
Why, trendsetter? Because you know what? Otis has shown his weakness. He's shown it since Mandy Rose walked into his life, and that is for the female flesh.
Oh, they say for catering.
Well, that too. But he's shown his weakness, and once the hero, once the good guy shows his weakness, it's evident that someone's going to use it against him. And it's going to happen, Trendsetter. Otis is not cashing in that Money in the Bank. You heard it here on the HSP SmackDown Review on the WWE Podcast. You heard it right here, Trendsetter.
You heard it right here. Loud and clear, though. But do you see that going anywhere? Is there more
to Vegas? Try to get to call your bookie, and if there's a betting odds on that bet, that Otis is not cashing that damn Money in the Bank briefcase.
But just real quick, Jeff, the whole build-up toward this thing was like they were excited about this leading up to WrestleMania. They're like, oh, it's just something different. It's entertaining. Everybody loves a love story, supposedly, in some way, or a love triangle scenario. now that it's completed, is there any interest by you or any belief that this is going anywhere more than just basically lovey-dovey and then eventually there might be a split?
I want to find out how he fails to cash it in. And this is, to me, this is the building block. This is the building steps.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we can nix Heavy Machinery ever becoming a tag team again, basically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tucker Knight. I mean, sorry, man.
Poor Tucker, man.
Yeah. Man, that's just a
victim. Sucks to be the third wheel, right, Jeff? I know that. You know, that's happened to me a lot of times, too.
Yeah, you're right.
It sucks to be a third wheel.
Third wheel, yeah. You know, maybe who knows? Maybe he will, you know, try to get revenge on his friend there because he kind of left him. That's what happens too when you get a girl; you kind of forget your friends. So, you never know. I mean, would I book it to be Tucker? No,
bros before you know what, guys.
Exactly. And I mean, would I book it? No, I wouldn't book Tucker to be the one that betrays Otis. You know, costing him the Money in the Bank opportunity, but. You never know. But I do believe, though, that he will not be cashing it in. All right, trendsetter. Sheamus's promo, you know, with Kayla Braxton, because she's hyping up, of course, the debut of Matt Riddle next week, because Kurt Angle was there at NXT. He was able to, you know, be the referee for that cage match between Matt Riddle and Timothy Thatcher. And we're going to get to see Matt Riddle on SmackDown. It's been rumored for a while, and now it's going to happen.
The original bro comes to the blue brand.
What do you think?
Bro. What do you mean? What I think? I think it's a good move. Just because, you know, I honestly feel like Matt's done pretty much all he can. I mean, there is the excitement of the tag team.
Don't you think you have to win? Like, I know he's a tag team champion, right? And he did great stuff with Pete Dunne. And
yeah, but we didn't see that fully. You know,
the Bruiserweight stuff.
It didn't really happen for him. But again, he had reached that pinnacle. We knew he wasn't going to be an NXT champion competitor in that scenario. So, and ultimately. They were like, you know what? We need to make more room on NXT for other potential superstars. So we moved him over to a new face, you know, in a new place right now. There's no question. I've watched Matt Riddle. We've met him before, too, in terms of, you know, during the WrestleMania weekend event. Seems like a really nice guy. He has an MMA background, so we know he can fight. But also he can perform, too. He's done great jobs on the indie scenes as he's built up his reputation and his track record as being a really good in-ring performer to make it to NXT. I think, Jeff, this is just the next step. I know a lot of people don't really buy into his character or buy into, like, what he's, you know, portraying in the ring. I really think, honestly, when you look at Matt Riddle and what he does in the ring or how he presents himself on TV, I kind of think that's kind of what he is. What you see is what you get type of mentality. And very few times do we see that, or I've seen that recently, where, you know, what you see is what you get. He's kind of like that, and he's really authentic because a lot of what he says you believe because he's really being himself. Granted, he's probably turning up the volume really high, but he's being himself. And, I mean, you just look at it now. There's talent there. Guys, I've repeated this a third time. There's talent on the roster. So let's see what he can do with it, too. But it's exciting. It's a new step. And again, here's the classic thing. They're just reintroducing him. I think it's a good move from SmackDown. Could be a silent wild card there. But I think Matt Riddle does have the ability in the ring. Now, if he can, you know, stop, you know, rubbing people the wrong way and burning bridges, he might have a better opportunity. But I think this is a good start for
obviously
him.
Obviously, didn't burn enough bridges to have to wait that long to be called up.
He's been in NXT for a while, though.
Well, but again, though, the reports, air quotes here, were saying that he had really, really done a bad job in rubbing people the wrong way, like you were talking about.
Yeah.
And it was so bad that, you know, that alleged Brock Lesnar confrontation.
Goldberg situation.
At the Rumble. Yeah, it's in the whole calling out Bill Goldberg.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously they see something in him, right? But here's the question. They did a good job in NXT with Matt Riddle. Will SmackDown do the same? I hope so. There's talented people enough there and creative to do a good job with Matt Riddle. And we'll see what happens, too. And it's a wait and see. But I cross my fingers that they do right by Matt.
But, Jeff, I'll leave you with this, right? We talk about, you say, the reports, the whole Brock Lesnar situation, the whole Goldberg rubbing people the wrong way, not making a lot of friends. But wasn't it a quote by somebody famous, if you're making friends, that means you're not making money? At the same time, he walks around with a chip on his shoulder. He thinks he's, you know, the end-all, be-all. And granted, He's entitled to feel that way, because you know what? You need that type of mentality to survive in these waters, which is the WWE, because honestly, you just said it too. What has he really done in NXT? I kind of gave you a couple of examples of what he did, but here's the thing. If he hasn't done much in your mind and he's being called up, either they're sick and tired of him in NXT and they want to get him out of the way. That could be one option. Or two, just like, wow, this guy really doesn't care what anybody thinks. Yeah. Let's give him an opportunity with some bigger sharks and see how he swims with those individuals. So I think Matt Riddle, granted, has the right mentality. As much as people want to say, hey, listen, keep your mouth shut and be respectful. There's a balance between respect and just being an a-hole. But at the same time, you know what? If that's gotten him this far, if it's not broke, don't fix it type of thing.
Yeah, and you kind of respect the guy that doesn't change who he is, right?
Exactly.
So definitely there. So Matt Riddle will debut next week on SmackDown on Fox. And then, of course, we get Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan. Now, really quick about that promo. To me, right now, the main culprit is Sheamus. That's how they're making it look like. I really don't know who else right now would have a vendetta against Elias or Jeff Hardy or would try to frame him. But to me right now, the number one culprit looks to be Sheamus. So we get him and Daniel Bryan in the main event, and Daniel Bryan gets the victory. But then we get an appearance from Jeff Hardy, who is attacking Sheamus. So does he know something that happened there? He's the guy that kind of took his spot, basically, that night. So are we going to get a continued rivalry between Jeff Hardy and Sheamus? Is Sheamus going to figure into this whole Matt Hardy? Is it the whole Jeff Hardy situation?
Oh, wrong Hardy there, Jeff.
Yeah, deletion. This whole Jeff Hardy fiasco. What's going to go on with Elias? But I really do think they're kind of setting it up that Sheamus, to me right now, from my deduction, is that right now Sheamus is the main culprit.
So he's the one who set up Brother Nero. I mean, Jeff Hardy, I'm sorry. yes. No, I see that's the way it's going. And I hate to say logical sense, guys, especially when it comes to pro wrestling, but I think that's the one that makes logical sense. And you know what? In the scenario here where he came back, distracted Sheamus losing now to Daniel Bryan, and now having that as a more fuel onto the fire of Sheamus wanting to get this revenge on him, but again, also Jeff Hardy wanting to get back at Sheamus for, you know, constantly mocking and basically making him feel bad about getting fifth, sixth, seventh chance type of thing. So I think that storyline's already built. It's kind of set itself up. You can kind of conclude that maybe it was Sheamus that set this whole thing up because Jeff Hardy has no recollection of it. So now I think that's where we're going towards in terms of leading to Backlash, guys, which is 2 weeks away. Don't forget to make sure you subscribe to the network. Free plug there for the WWE to see that. But again, it also pits something to in terms of, listen, we didn't get the dream match we wanted to get at Backlash because Jeff and I said, hey, AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, wow. But we're going to get a match that's not a bad consolation prize. But now we're going to have Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles. And you know, regardless of storyline, regardless of anything, just on paper, I'm sold.
Just
that's going to be entertaining.
20, 25 minutes. Please just stand back and let's bring some credibility back to this Intercontinental title. I mean, Daniel Bryan.
And to your point, credibility to a title that's lacked it for so long.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. title kind of has been that next title, and the IC title for the longest time now, for at least 10 plus years, has just taken the back seat, right? I mean, it's just been just forgotten. And, you know, hopefully. You keep your fingers crossed that one of these two guys can do it. Like we said, Daniel Bryan did a good job as the IC champion. AJ Styles is a good U.S. champion. Maybe he'll be an even better Intercontinental champion. But again, just let these guys go. 20, 25 minutes, I'll watch wherever it is, whether it's on a SmackDown, whether it's in Sheboygan, whether it's at Backlash. I'll watch.
Where is Sheboygan, by the way?
Sheboygan.
Sounds familiar.
I always use Jericho say Sheboygan, but I've never really looked up where Sheboygan is. But it's actually a city, though.
Yes. I'm trying to remember where it's from. But no, that's a great point, though, because it's amazing, Jeff, and I don't know when
it
happened.
Can I find out the spelling before the show's over?
I don't know. You know, Sheboygan. Again, that's probably more wishful thinking than actually, it's probably more, likely
Sheboygan
to do that.
Is in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, there you go. And but yeah, like you see these two individuals, and this goes back to what I've said before. Guys, if you listen to the High Spot podcast, you know the point I make here. They're just certain individuals, and I mentioned this of Charlotte as well. They're just certain individuals that just, in my opinion, at this stage in their career, they just don't need titles. No. So the mere fact that you have Daniel Bryan, accomplished superstar, he's done a lot, he's become WWE champion, several times now, twice, and he's garnered so much adulation and love from the WWE Universe. And they have AJ Styles, which, you know, honestly, he could work with a broomstick and for 45 minutes and
both
make
these
an
guys
entertainment.
Could.
Both of them could. They don't need the Intercontinental title.
No.
So it's like, you know, it's nice to know they're battling for something that's important to them. But I just feel like nowadays it's always about the history of what it was as opposed to what it is now. So, no. Again, you hope. We've said this several times when it comes to scenarios where they're actually pitting the Intercontinental Championship to have some type of relevancy behind it. Hopefully it works this time. But again, you know, they've just had so many times to rebrand and repackage the Intercontinental title. Let's hope that this one could be the final one we're talking about in terms of bringing some relevancy there. But I don't see it happening. I still see it being an entertaining match. But again, wow, what a great consolation prize. Sometimes you don't always get what you want on your birthday, but you get that one gift like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. Or maybe I was expecting it, but at the end of the day, even though I didn't get what I really wanted, this ain't so bad. So that's what we get now. It's set AJ Styles versus Daniel Bryan in the finals at Backlash for the Intercontinental Championship.
And
make sure you call your local cable provider.
I was confused because Adam Pearce had said that it was going to be like in two weeks.
Adam Pearce is a fool, Jeff, and he doesn't know what he's talking about.
I was like, why is he going to be on SmackDown? I mean,
well, that's what we heard, and that's what the confusion is, guys. And we'll figure it out and try to decipher it next week when we have better understanding. Because you thought originally this was
Backlash,
but then you know him saying that, you know, this will happen in 2 weeks. Now 2 weeks is Backlash, but in 2 weeks we'll be on Fox. Now I'm like, all right, well, that's an interesting dynamic. If it's not going to be on Backlash, it's going to be on Fox. So now you're giving Fox something in terms of, you know, hopefully people want to tune in to shoot this up in terms of rating value. So that's an interesting thing as well if that happens. But regardless, whether it's on SmackDown, Jeff, or Backlash, it's going to happen. They're going to battle for the Intercontinental Championship. So that's pretty exciting there. And a pretty interesting, to say the least, episode of SmackDown. It started off, as you say, chaotic. Kind of ended the way we thought it was going to end, especially as everything was kind of building up towards the end of the show. So that's what we have. And now where does this put? We know where it's put Jeff Hardy. Where this puts Jeff Hardy. Where does it put Elias? No offense, but I don't think anybody really is worried about that right now because at the same time, and I hate to say it, I'm not trying to bash Elias here, but he's been kind of a placeholder. You know, you put him here, you put him in this scenario to kind of hold things to a certain degree, and then we'll just move him to the side type of scenario. That's what I feel like right now what they're doing with Elias.
Yeah, it feels like every time he's got like a push, they just hold off on it. And yeah, we find out that that it will be decided, the Intercontinental title, that tournament will be June 12th on Fox. So it's not going to be on Backlash. It will be. So he did say 2 weeks, and that's going to be 2 weeks on SmackDown on Fox. So that will be for the vacant IC title. And you got to think that somewhere down the road that Sami Zayn is going to come back and challenge that, you know, the winner of this one, if they're still the champion for that vacant title.
If he comes back. You've been talking about there might be some bad blood in the water, man.
This whole pandemic. You never know, man.
You never know.
Hopefully, we're getting on the other side sooner than later.
Well, so I'll tell you something we do know, Jeff. That you guys have been listening to the HSP SmackDown review here with the Jersey Rank crew, with the scoundrel Jeff Mark, because I am the trendsetter Brian Bergen. God, yeah, what a show it's been, man. And now, next week is the go-home show, Jeff.
Yeah, it's the go-home for Backlash. You know, you got In Your House this weekend, NXT In Your House.
It's In Your House?
Yeah. Yeah,
are they selling a house?
Yeah. No house.
Is Todd Pettingill coming back? Please, Todd Pettingill, please come back. That was so good.
Oh, we missed Todd, man.
We missed Todd.
You know, it's not going to be at the Performance Center. It's going to be undisclosed area for NXT In Your House, though.
Really?
So you got that.
It's going to be like Fight Island the UFC is trying to do. Like, they're trying to actually buy an island to host UFC events.
You know what? I believe when I see that. Like, when are we going to see Fight Island?
Yeah. Well, in this case, you couldn't call it Wrestler Island because now it's Sports Entertainment Island. But yeah.
So
it's an undisclosed area they're going
to
have it.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, so we got In Your House coming up. So you definitely want to stick to the NXT review by Zach Smith here on the WWE podcast. You want to check your AEW review. So much to discuss there, man.
Yeah.
You got the Revival showing up, the Revolt, whatever whatever they are. They're there. So, obviously, and of course, that stadium stampede was amazing, so obviously they'll be talking about that on the AEW review with Jeff Johnson. You've got Matt, the main host who does the Raw reviews, Wrestling Nostalgia, Saturday Night Week in Review, with such talented people like Mary Grater, Ashley Mann.
Mary Bear.
Yeah, and Anthony DeMarco. So definitely, you know, this is a loaded. These are loaded shows here. So obviously, so much to talk about in the world of professional wrestling.
There's just so much content out there, Jeff.
Yeah,
isn't
definitely
there?
So much contract. So much out there. So much content. Available for your listening pleasure. I am Jeff Martin. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew, guys. Again, you can also listen to us on the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on all our social media at High Spot Podcast on bodyslam.net. We are on that wrestling news website as well. So we talk about everything in pro wrestling, so check us out as well. Definitely just give us a follow at High Spot Podcast, Trendsetter. And hey, Drew Gulak, welcome back.
Yeah, he signed a contract.
Welcome back. I complained
and it was specifically about us when we talked about it on the show, about how could you do this? How could you build him up and not have him resign? He's resigned. You're welcome, Drew. We're expecting a fruit basket in the mail pretty soon.
Yeah,
but again,
don't count
you know,
on it,
the way it's being delivered nowadays, it might take 4 weeks to come in. But again, you know, fruit doesn't go bad, does it? Yeah,
hey,
it does something.
Hey, listen, great doing the show again, our second week in a row. So we will see you guys next week.
Yeah, two in the books, guys. You guys have been listening to the HSP SmackDown Review. Remember, we do this show and the High Spot Podcast for one reason and one reason only. We do this for you,
the crew.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.